Joe, Duff, they did it again. The patrons, the child army, the Sheba pit, they come through. They give us money.
Something in the water. They've gone crazy.
I don't know what's happened, but it's gone viral. We've gone viral, guys. I think what's happened.
We've gotten a lot of new people this year. The economy must be doing pretty well. People can just throw that money away on us.
I think between us, like, getting this request and recording it, there's another request for another one of these coming. So we're going to keep doing it. We're going to talk about Mrs. Winterbourne. We will dive into the plot. We'll talk about, I'm sure, a lot of Ricky Lake content. Brendan Fraser, and maybe if you stick around to the end, maybe we'll tell you some lies of ours that we've told. I mean, if any of us have ever lied, we would
no.
We'll tell the time we did, the one time that we each lied.
Shh.
Welcome to another episode of the Midnight Boys Present a Free Podcast. I'm your co-host, Rob, and joined, as always, by my fruit-throwing friends, Joe and Duff. Hello!
Hello!
It's great to be here.
This movie, it took down two of the three Midnight Boys. It tried to kill them.
That's true. We had to reschedule two different recordings because I got sick and then Joe did, and we had both watched this movie.
It's like It Follows. Like, you stay sick until someone else watches this movie.
Yes.
It's the Winterbourne sickness.
Winterbourne illness. Winterbourne illness. I like this.
Mrs. Winterbourne comes out of the TV like the ring girl from that well.
This is the time when Ricky Lake could have.
Boo.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Boo.
Listen, there's listeners out there.
We are that laughed. Less than a minute into this, and you've been canceled.
There's listeners who got a laugh out of that, okay, and some who moved on to a new podcast.
We can't afford to lose anybody, man.
So let's back up here. Let's back up the train, huh, guys?
Stop the train.
But
not by crashing into something.
No. All right. So, first off, Lou, is our listener who requested this. Yes. Thank you very much. I will tell you, she said that
she's immediately regretting this purchase, but we'll try to make it up.
I think it's good we waited a while between receiving it and recording it and putting it out so that longer that she didn't have to regret it. Her actually hitting play on this and being like, oh no, already Rob said something he shouldn't have. She sent this because this is a movie that, I don't know much. This is her birthday request. She wants us to talk about this movie. She wants us to not hold back, get our real thoughts. And, we're good for that. That's a thing you can get from us.
And she's a long-time listener. She knows what she's getting into.
Right. Let me tell you guys. This is one of those movies that, like, when, she's like, oh, the movie is Mrs. Winterbourne, and then you look it up. I was like, this is a real thing? This movie, A, exists. I've never heard of it. B, it feels like one of those movies that, like, you would see, like, as a fake trailer during another movie. Do you know what I mean? You'd be like, oh, the Brendan Fraser, Ricky Lake rom-com? That one?
Yeah, like, it's one of those, like, the movies in Forgetting Sarah Marshall they keep cutting to.
Right, yeah. Like, it's just like, what is this? Or even we talked about The Holiday recently. That has, like, fake trailer in it as well.
So I figured out that I remembered commercials for this but had not. Like, other than that, I have not heard this movie mentioned, good, bad, neutral, in, what, close to 30 years? Was this 96?
96, yeah. This
didn't have staying power.
No.
There's no Ringer articles reappraising Mrs. Winterbourne.
Is it, like, but I was thinking,
not
is this
yet.
Is this, sometimes one fun thing about rom-coms, I feel like, is it creates interesting of the time pairings,
mm-hmm.
right? So like Brendan Fraser and Ricky Lake. Like it's a very small time in the existence of Hollywood where that could
their stars were at the same level ever so briefly.
Yeah. And I don't even mean like I was thinking a movie not like this at all, but I was thinking about rewatching recently is Eternal Sunshine of a Spotless Mind, and I was thinking how like isn't it kind of, like I know we all know that, but isn't it weird that there's like Kate Winslet, Jim Carrey, like that was a pairing.
It wasn't quite as out there because Jim Carrey had done some dramatic stuff by then, but
right,
yeah.
Plus it was a movie where they never had to be on screen together and happy.
True.
So like it was a movie where there didn't even need to be any like real chemistry before them, because most of the time they're on screen together they dislike each other,
right,
or they barely know each other,
right?
Well, I mean, as far as they know, they do.
Yeah. I just think like, you know, even like a movie that's like well regarded like that, it's just interesting that, you know, they create, I don't know, just strange brains. Also, poor Kate Winslet, like stuck with Jack Black in a movie and then Jim Carrey, but then also been with Leo. Like, she's gone all over the place on who she's been with in Hollywood and movies.
Why are you saying poor her?
Well, mostly because the Jack Black thing. We don't need to.
She's had some hunks.
She has had some hunks.
She's had some on-screen hunks.
Yeah, I mean, you know that she doesn't have to date them in real life if she's in a movie with them, right?
I thought she's a method actress, and she does.
Do a lot worse than Jack Black, man. He's funny.
Well,
and he's a beautiful singer.
He's a beautiful singer. So, okay, let's talk about Mrs. Winterbourne. Let's talk about the plot. This is a
God. This movie's ridiculous.
The first like 15 minutes of this are wild.
Okay, so in 5 minutes in this movie, I wrote this down because I paused it to be like, wow, okay, what's happened in 5 minutes? The Ricky Lake character moves out of house, like just leaves her house, moves to New York City, meets a boyfriend.
28-year-old Ricky Lake playing a teenager.
meets a boyfriend in New York, moves in, gets pregnant, and is then homeless. That is 5 minutes.
Yeah. He does not like that she got pregnant.
10 minutes after that, she's already met Brendan Fraser and his pregnant fiance on a train.
Who's arriving from Hong Kong and no one knows what she looks like.
Right. Of which the train then crashes, and then she wakes up in a hospital, and it turns out that everyone thinks this down on her luck Ricky Lake character is actually the
fiance
of Brendan Fraser's character.
Yes.
And the reason they think that is before the train crashed, Brendan Fraser's fiance dropped her ring that had engraved on it Hugh and Patricia, Hugh being the name of Brendan Fraser's character.
Brendan Fraser can't be named Hugh.
Hugh.
Yeah.
And then Patricia obviously being Patricia Winterbourne. And because of that, apparently, you know, that's as far as they went on checking who this could be. They were like, the ring is right. It has to be her.
Well, you know, I mean, I'm sure that they're like, what are the odds of two pregnant women being on this train that crashed? We found one.
This is why I wear a wedding ring, even though I'm not married anymore, that says Travis and Taylor.
What's interesting, what's interesting is that I missed it. Does she not have any family?
No, she just has that dirt bag who threw her out.
No, the woman who died.
The woman who died on the
Obviously, like you just have to just shrug your shoulders and say okay at this whole deal, right? But the movie only seems to think that she needs to trick like the negligent medical staff at the hospital.
Uh-huh.
And Hugh's family. But what about her family?
What about the original Patricia's family?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's like an old Western where it's like, well, it would take weeks to find that out. We'll have to send a telegram across the country.
Were all the corpses, like, incinerated or something?
Well, it was a pretty graphic train wreck, Joe. And by that, I mean it looks like on the original Star Trek where they would just shake the camera and tilt it. Yeah. Look, I'm not expecting a fugitive action sequence, but it is quite poorly shot. And just, you can tell we have no budget for the train wreck. Everyone just kind of wobble.
It's set up on the stuff that like for like a Disneyland ride or something like that.
Yeah,
these are really good questions you're asking, Joe, and I don't think we're meant to think about them in the movie, but now that you have me thinking about it, she is from Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
well, you know, that's just the savage jungle. No way to know.
Well, how would like I said, the only reason they think this is Patricia is because of the wedding ring. How mm-hmm. would they possibly send a letter to Hong Kong to find out anymore?
Yeah, and like, and when they were like, where would you like us to send her remains? They're like, eh, we don't need it.
Well, she doesn't have remains.
Like that's what I'm asking. Like, they cannot find the body at all. That's what I don't understand.
Oh, I think they... Oh, you mean the original Patricia, did they find her body to think that she's Connie?
Somewhere we have a pregnant corpse.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, what happened to it?
Yeah, like, is it just waiting in a freezer? Like, has anyone showed up yet? Nope. Oh, well.
Yeah, that's a good... Normally, I would hope.
I guess her family doesn't think that she's dead.
Right.
But, like...
But where is the body?
Yeah. But,
where's and the also, pregnant
also corpse? Assuming there's also dead Brendan Fraser and assuming other people on the train.
Yeah.
Like, here's a question.
Okay. Yeah. Where's Hugh's body? He dies. He dies.
Hugh and like, his Hong Kong fiance die, and I'm guessing there's other bodies, and what happened?
So was there just no funeral for Hugh? Like he has an incredibly wealthy family. So like even if the body's in really bad shape, like you'd think they would certainly pay to fly it home. Where was this train? I forgot.
Well, see, I think what you're forgetting is traditionally
Boston.
Traditionally, when train accidents happen, what they do is they bury the entire train with the bodies in it next to the track, and then they put up a little train wheel that's white.
They put
and
up
they
like
lean
a,
it against the fence.
Someone puts a rock there and just spray paints RIP on it.
Someone every year they put down flowers because their drunk uncle drove an ATV there, and it's like that.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's traditionally what happens to big train incidents. So
I have a question.
Okay.
When they go to the morgue, would a nine month pregnant lady be able to fit into the freezer slot?
I think they would. I mean,
they seem. You think they're that tall?
I mean they need to make those. This is America. These slots are big for people.
Yeah,
that's true.
They sent her to a Midwestern corpse freezer where they build them a little bigger out here.
The Our Family brand freezers.
The whale sized. Brendan Fraser joke.
They just shove her in a Schwann's truck and off they go.
A Schwann's truck.
Well, the issue though is you with a Schwann's truck, you have to change drivers every time you cross state lines because they can't leave the state.
Yeah, the ankle callback there goes off.
The only kids they can transfer are the ones that are in a dead pregnant
So
body.
All that nonsense is what the first 15 minutes, like we said.
I just why a train? Like, it would be so much easier to like kind of explain away this lack of like inquisition into the true identities of the fallen. Why wasn't it a plane crash that she miraculously
could have
survived?
You could have had a door break open and just had one of them sucked out. Yeah. Then you don't have to worry about where the body goes or anything.
So. Should we finish the plot? I'll just say it. I did have in my notes that I think that if you had a probably better than competent, but this is a great film noir setup.
Yeah.
But I have in my notes, this movie is like if Billy Wilder were kicked in the head and then tried to make a movie. because honestly, like, it has kind of like a Sunset Boulevard, like, oh, we see a corpse right away, but it's just so badly, like, you know, between like 28-year-old/18-year-old Ricky Lake and her, like, her, like, stereotypical dirtbag boyfriend, hey, get out of here, that baby's probably not mine,
right? It's sort of like it's a movie with all of this possibility for sort of drama through a good but flawed person trying to, like, resist temptation, right? Because she could easily milk this for a lot of money, a lot of comfort, but she just spends the whole movie just saying no and feeling bad all the time. All
right, so we should maybe just get to the plot.
Yeah, essentially, that's what it just finish Duff's point there. It's just like, yeah, it's got all the possibilities of, like, the darkness of a film noir or the dark humor of a film noir, but it doesn't do any of that.
So, yeah, so she essentially, they think she's the Winterborn. She thinks she's the engaged person to the dead Brendan Fraser. However, I also love how, like, in this movie's plot, this isn't even one of the weirdest things. Brendan Fraser's Hugh Winterborn had a twin brother named Bill, also played by Brendan Fraser.
Wow, yeah.
Dual roles for our man whale.
Two really whales. Stretched out for this one.
Have you ever seen Dead Ringers? It's like that.
You thought Dead Ringers was weird. Check out Mrs. Winterborn.
And then I don't know if we need to go into the big plot here, but essentially, yeah, she has all these opportunities that she can just take the money from this family, but she doesn't want to because she feels bad. She has the baby now. The baby's fine.
Yeah. I mean, there's very typical, like, her and Bill fall in love.
Right.
Shirley MacLaine plays the mother of Hugh and Bill. And
why is she in this movie?
Gravitas?
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know much about.
I know she's Warren Beatty's sister and believes in reincarnation.
Yeah, but I guess I don't know, like, how choosy she was.
Yeah, I don't know. But
looks like she's in a movie pretty much one or two a year up through the late 90s, so I guess probably wasn't that choosy.
Yeah, maybe she had some tax issues or something. So, yeah, we have fairly typical, she's winning them over while keeping the lie that she's not the actual daughter. And then the dirtbag reappears.
Yes. So the boyfriend from New York that was the father, he...
Who lives in Travis Bickle's apartment. Just comically, like, down to the, like, Scarface poster on the wall with no frame. It's just the most stereotypical D-bag apartment.
He's like a bad guy in an SNL sketch.
Yes.
Yeah, so he comes back and essentially tries to blackmail her. And then he ends up dead at the end, and we don't know who did it. And the police come, and the mother-in-law, Shirley MacLaine, says she did it. Brendan Fraser says he did it. Paco says he did it.
Paco, the mining guy from Jurassic Park, who is in this.
Is that who that is?
He's a digger. Yeah. Oh,
wow.
I don't remember the name of his character. He's just the guy in the beginning. He's like, Grant's like me. He's a digger.
and then Ricky Lake also says she did it. And it turns out that another woman that he knocked up and left of homeless is the one who killed him.
Yeah.
So,
and everyone forgives Ricky Lake, and they let her in the family in the end.
Yes.
And she marries Bill, in case you didn't guess.
She marries Bill, which is also, like, you know, a weird thing in general, I would say. If what her story was true, is weird in its own way, where it's like, oh, you remember when I was almost going to marry your twin brother, but then he died in a plane crash in a train accident, and now I just married you instead? Like,
yeah, I'm not sure how much time is supposed to have passed. It's not much, because she has a baby, and it's not aging. So
a baby that... She doesn't do anything for it.
She leaves. Yeah, she goes on long dates. My favorite
it's
is
a very well-behaved baby.
When she goes on the dates with Bill, the Brendan Fraser character, and she's like, "Don't you need to get back to work?" And he's like, "No, I could stay out." And all the while, I'm like, "Where's your baby?"
Yeah, it's like she. Why is what's his name?
Paco?
Yeah, is Paco taking care of the baby?
I guess so.
But it's just like, it's so funny that she's just like, there's just a key plot point here is that she has a baby. It can't be more than
weeks.
Well,
at most.
I mean, the baby playing the baby is definitely older than that, but like, right. Storyline wise, it's got to be maybe
weeks, months.
A few
at
months
best.
At tops. So she'd be awake all the time. Mm-hmm. You can't be away.
Yeah, this movie treats the baby like it's just someone's elderly cat, where it's like, look, just put out some water, like put out fresh water in the morning, food at night. It's fine. You can go away for
before,
like 10 hours.
You know, before things get serious between us, do you have any baby allergies? Because I do have a baby at home.
It's like
you'd have to live with.
It's like an elderly cat that the people like don't really care that much about, though. Yeah. Where it would be like you'd go to watch them, and you're like, do I need like information for the vet? Nah, don't worry about it.
It's like we all gotta go sometime.
You don't worry about it. If it dies while we're on vacation, we're not gonna blame you. You'd be doing us a favor. Okay, so let's start. Let's start nice here. What is something about this movie that you, a scene, a moment, a performance perhaps, that you were like, yeah, that was charming. I like that.
Well, it has people I like in it. Okay. I was going to say, like, Shirley MacLaine is so delightful that she can almost sell some of these terrible jokes.
Yeah, she's good in it. I mean, she is delightful.
Beyond that, nothing really clicked for me.
I will say, I thought, you know, we're talking in the world of rom-coms and stuff. The sequence where Bill's Brendan Fraser is like making the pro con list for her on why she should stay versus going, I thought that was a charming little sequence.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
I got paid to watch it.
Fair.
Perfect.
I there were some moments in it where I thought it started to approach camp, mm-hmm. and I was hoping it would just keep going all the way. Like Ricky Lake's in it, so like I don't know why you aren't going the camp route if you're gonna
because of the John Waters stuff.
Yeah, I mean you know that she can do it,
right?
So like that stupid scene when. Brendan Fraser keeps walking by her over and over again and kissing her and making out and coming up with some excuse why you keep walking past her in the kitchen or whatever.
Yeah.
Yes.
I was
yes.
like, that went on for so long that I started to wonder if maybe the director was in on the joke.
And now that you say it, the scene where Paco is drunk in the drained pool also has like a very like campy, like birdcage feel to it. Like,
mm-hmm.
so.
Mm-hmm.
So
Bobcat just didn't have the courage to go all the way with that kind of tone.
God, so I love how this movie it does the like it has a meta like Rick Dalton pointing at the TV thing. We see a guy watching TV, and to make sure we know who that is, like man, Bobcat Goldthwait is so funny. Just
yeah, that was like, a strange and unexpected.
We see something on the TV, and the character references it. Okay, movie. Like this, did Bobcat like win a bet with someone? It's like you have to feature my name in this movie now. That was the rule.
Well, I will say I appreciate it because as a movie we've talked about a lot but never discussed, he's in a movie I loved as a kid growing
it's the
up.
Horse movie.
Hot to Trot. Movie.
Number one, I don't think anyone is slamming Bobcat Goldthwait.
Okay, good.
I love Bobcat.
It's just so bizarre. This movie has a lot of. Weird moments like that, like it's the jokes are all like it feels like an alien trying to replicate humor, but they're only shown bad sitcoms. Like,
it's a ChatGPT wrote this.
Yes, like there's so many just really clunky, like very like step by step TGIF level jokes that are terrible.
Maybe the studio had something with Bobcat coming out, so they threw him in this to, like, you know, to try to.
So here's, I will say that because we were paid for this, I did do research, but I did not do research on the actual history of this movie because I wanted to be done with it. And does anyone know what is the? I know that it's based on a short story, and there was a movie with Barbara Stanwyck.
Correct.
In the 50s, but this feels like a movie where, you know how like Beverly Hills Cop was supposed to be with Stallone and was supposed to be serious, and then like he backed out at the last minute and they just totally retooled it and somehow it worked. Like, I feel like it's a situation like that where who was originally going to be in this, who was going to direct it, what was the tone?
Does anyone know? The limited research I found, I did not find any.
There's
like,
also not a lot.
Right. I will say the thing that did amuse me is I was looking up like cast and crew a little bit on this movie, which generally is a boring task, I'm aware. But the thing that made me laugh is one of the writers is this guy named Feef Sutton. Mm-hmm. And he wrote two movies, both released in 1996. Okay?
Good year. Good year for
one me. Was Mrs. Winterbourne. Mm-hmm. All right? And the other one, I could let you look at the list of movies from 1996, and I think it would be not even in the top 20 movies you would pick. It is The Fan.
the baseball movie?
Yes! Huh. The baseball one with De Niro and Snipes.
Yeah.
So, weird.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand. Now, I don't understand. Now, it was co-written, so maybe Lisa Maria Rodano or... had more of a role in it, but she doesn't have Wikipedia.
My theory, and you know, if any of the Winterbourne crew are out there, just let us know. It just feels like something where, you know, someone quit and then another person quit, and then just a bunch of empty suits, just, you know, like you said, ChatGPT'd it and just poured a bunch of stuff in. Like, oh, it was hot right now. The kids like Ricky Lake. Put her in a movie.
Right. The other interesting thing is this movie is the last picture from A&M Films.
Our good friend Herb Alpert.
Yeah. And I looked at the theatrical, this is only lasted about a decade. Early on, nice little run with like Better Off Dead and The Breakfast Club, but it quickly falls apart and ends yeah, with Mrs. Does. Winterbourne in 1996.
So I know we've talked about this, but A&M Records was co-founded by legendary musician Herb Alpert. Who must have more money than God by this point. But I just like how, like, this is movies like, we're done with movies. Ricky Lake ruined it for him.
The other interesting thing I thought from the cat before we jump into the cast, but the crew, is the guy who directed it is, like, this guy that did a lot of things, apparently, but Richard Benjamin, and he was, like, an actor, so he was in, like, Catch 22 and Westworld and stuff, but then he ended up being a writer as well and supporting actor and stuff, and then he ended up writing or being a director on a bunch of movies as well,
yeah,
including Made in America in The Money Pit.
I remember looking at all his stuff and just kind of definition of C-list, like,
right, stuck around in Hollywood for a long time though doing this stuff,
yeah,
so
yeah,
you know,
good
for
on him.
Him, yeah, good for him. But yeah, so, I'm sure we're going to dive into Ricky Lake more here. But, you know, one thing I was thinking about with Ricky Lake in this movie and just, like, the thing about Ricky Lake is she does, you know, Joe, you mentioned she gets her start with, like, camp with John Waters movies. But, like, I think the reason she, you know, became a star the way she did is that she did kind of, like, have this normal girl next door sort of thing, right? Like, that was kind of her aesthetic. Like, think of like late 80s teenage girl that you could let, you know, was in your school. I mean, we were too young for that, but still, like, Ricky yeah. Lake kind of fits that. And, you know, she doesn't come from,
she's not threatening,
there's not nepotism to get her to become a star. And I was like thinking, like, is there a Ricky Lake that can exist in today's Hollywood in any way? I don't feel like you can just discover a, you know, I don't even mean this in a mean way. I just mean this, like, this doesn't happen. But, like, an average-looking person who's not connected to Hollywood through nepotism somehow can like have a career.
I think you have to get internet famous and then maybe springboard from there. But I know what you're saying, and yeah,
I can't think of an example of someone who's done that that would fit that mold in any way.
I'm trying to think of a modern equivalent.
The closest thing is you have like, I don't know, I can't even think of the closest thing, and I'm so jaded, and I'm so like, whenever there's like a new famous young star or whatever, I always look it up, and I'm always like, oh, what rich person are they connected to somehow? What incredible wealth did they come from? Oh, they're from the Rooney Mara family or like whatever, right? I mean, there's always something.
Or sometime in the 90s, Walt Disney Company just figured out how to create superstars in a lab.
Yeah, like, that's true. The Disney, the Mickey Mouse Club people.
Like, yeah, like ever since then, like all that High School Musical type stuff, like Disney just has a bunch of alien xenomorph pods somewhere, and they come out and they all look like, you know, Zac Efron or someone like that.
So I don't know. I just like, and I know we've talked about Ricky Lake when we discussed Serial Mom, although I think that was on, I think that was behind the paywall.
Yeah, I believe so.
But like, it's just interesting career that I don't think there's a comp in any way before or after. You know, we've talked a little bit about like we could do, and maybe we could do like an entire season on like the late like talk shows in the 80s and 90s and how big they were. But like hers was an example of like a lot of the talk shows hosts were getting older, and it was like, how can we get people in their 20s, like under 30 people to like tune into these new talk shows? And Ricky Lake was successful in doing that because she was.
And now you have to be super mega famous to have a daytime talk show like Drew Barrymore or someone like that.
Right. Yeah. Which, I mean, Ricky Lake was famous. I mean, she had been in Hairspray, but like her career was starting to come on the way back down, I feel like, a little bit. And then she got this show.
She is best known still for her talk show, I'd say. Maybe Hairspray. But yes. I mean, the talk show, I think, is what made her mark.
I don't know.
To me, it's just, think about, her show came on the air in 1993 and left in, I believe, 2004. And think about how different TV was even in those years. And that's even without streaming. It's just in the early 90s, like, cable was still kind of a wasteland. Like, there were some original shows, but otherwise just cable or whoever needed syndicated stuff. Like, there was just so much syndicated television because it was cheap and they needed stuff to sell to fill airtime.
Right.
And then even by 2004, it was kind of like the golden age of HBO and everything was starting to get really expensive and prestigious.
Yeah, that's like the 93. Yeah, that's fascinating. So it's just like, once again, like back to the beginning, it's just like there was a rom-com with Ricky Lake and Brendan Fraser.
Hollywood never really knew what to do with Brendan Fraser because he's kind of I think he would say it too. He's kind of like an odd looking lead. Like,
I mean, he's a good looking guy.
He's good looking, but in like a different way, if that makes sense. Like, he's, I don't know how to explain it. Like, he has like an aura about him where I think if you saw a picture of him, you would expect him to be a huge dick, but he's very funny and seems like a very nice guy.
Yeah, I mean, there's others. I don't know the details. Maybe there's other stuff with why his career kind of like came to an end, right? Was there?
He got groped by some Hollywood guy. He was okay.
Back injuries too.
Yeah, he also, yeah, he, one of his, it was, he was very seriously like sexually assaulted by some, I forget which producer it was. And then, yeah, his body went through the ringer doing those mummy movies.
Right. I mean, yeah, that's
a really bad divorce too, I think.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the other thing.
We talked about this when we did the mummy episode, but there's a great interview that came out a few years ago where he's really candid about all of it.
Yeah.
It's good one. Good.
That's right. I was trying to think of, I was like, what? I was trying to think of what Brendan Fraser movie you talked about, and I was thinking of Son-in-Law, but we also talked about The Mummy as well. So, okay. All right. Now that makes sense.
He was in a lot of movies in the 90s, and they were all kind of aimed at our age demographic.
Yeah, I mean, he was in a lot of movies in the 90s, and you're right, like especially early on with like Son-in-Law,
Encino Man,
Airheads. Yeah. And then now he's... Did he win an Oscar for The Whale, or he just got nominated?
He won an Oscar for strapping on a fat suit. I'm sorry. I think we all like Brendan Fraser, and it's like I made a wish on a monkey's paw that he should win an Oscar, and he made it in the just most stereotypical Oscar baitish movie ever. It's so... Look, it's bad. It's okay to say it's bad. It's so friggin' dumb. It's like Fat Bastard from Austin Powers. You don't have to say something is good just because someone sat in a chair to put on prosthetics. Why are we still doing fat suits? Like, I can see it, like, maybe for like a comedic bit if it's not too mean.
But like, I love how you started this, like, haven't we as a society grown past the need for fat suits, and then you quickly followed it up with, unless it's gonna be funny.
I am much more okay with that than us pretending that this dude in 300 pounds of latex, like, just stumbling through this very pretentious Aronofsky movie is worthy of... listen.
Why isn't the fat guy being a clown?
Listen. But you know what, though, Duff, you're right. If you're gonna put a fat suit on, you better take some pratfalls and some tumbles,
yeah,
so I can have a big laugh.
Yeah.
I want to see you on a skateboard or
fatty,
something.
Fatty, stay in your lane and fall down, fatty.
I want, yeah, man. If there's a fat suit, I want one of the jackass boys in it.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah. Perfect example. It's funny when they're wearing a fat suit in Jackass. If they put a fat suit on and sat in a chair for 90 minutes,
and just,
that wouldn't be
any good. And just like, oh, my daughter doesn't love me. Oh.
I think a new thing we need to do is around this time of the year, the three of us need to hang out in real life, and we need to get Duff as drunk as we can, and then make him kind of like when Rushmore during the MTV Movie Awards like redid scenes from movies. I want Duff to just hammer doing versions of different Best Picture things, his real takes.
I have a huge folder of screenplays, and I could give us some pages that we have to study when we're sober and then try to redo them. We could put that on the Patreon page, couldn't we?
So, Joe, I think this is your question about Ricky Lake's performance.
Yeah. So, okay. For a good chunk of the movie, I was sitting there. Listen, I got no beef with Ricky Lake. She's been very unfairly attacked throughout her career with, you know, body image stuff, and
right. I mean, terrible. You look at like
by Rob and... during this episode.
Yes.
TVs weren't very big then, guys. They
man,
weren't,
dude. Yeah. Then I started to think, like, the character that she's playing. Yeah. Listen, everyone knows how I feel about lying. It's funny and it's easy. And I don't know if I've ever seen a worse liar in my life, fiction or otherwise, than her in this movie. Like, she makes Jerry Lundegaard look like a cold operator. She's such a bad liar. She's awful. And she's surrounded by people that want to believe her,
mm-hmm.
except for Hugh initially. And then he ultimately just decides...
Bill. Hugh's
Bill,
dead.
Whatever. Yeah.
Okay. Hugh's dead on the train they buried.
No way to find him. No way to find the body.
No way to find the body because they buried the whole train.
They just tipped the train over in a big hole, cover it up.
So is this an example of a horrible performer just not being able to carry their weight? Or is this a brilliant performer fully embodying the bad liar role? Because that's what acting is, basically, is lying.
Yeah. Yeah, you make it up.
Yeah, so like you're pretending to be someone that you're not, yeah. right? In make believe. So, what do you guys think? Is she the world's worst actor, or is this just an unbelievable performance of the world's worst liar?
I mean, doesn't it have to be the latter? Because the movie doesn't work if she just effortlessly lies through this whole thing like it's no problem.
Why
right?
doesn't
like,
it?
Because you need to like. Because she's the moral backbone that you need to be like.
But
she's
doing the
right thing.
But she can be good at lying, but then you can have like subtle visual cues that she feels bad about it.
People who are good at lying.
Or she could like talk to the baby like every 20 minutes and talk about how bad she feels for lying as like a soliloquy.
She does talk to the baby a lot.
Yeah.
She doesn't care for it much, but she does talk to it.
So you have you have these moments where like the screenwriter's like, look, I'm not smart enough to be able to figure out a way for these characters to sort of communicate their feelings non-verbally. So I'm going to go full like Shakespeare mode here and just have her deliver soliloquies to an infant that she otherwise doesn't care about at all.
Famously, Look Who's Talking had no talking babies until they watched the original cut and they were like, we got to make these babies talk.
Holy crap.
What have we done? What have we done?
This doesn't work. What do? Make the babies talk.
Get Bruce Willis.
Anyways, I don't know how I got on Look Who's Talking. Babies.
Yeah, they take some work. You can't just talk to them then go out for like 7 hours.
Yeah. So are you falling on the other side, Duff, that you think it's a bad performance?
I honestly don't know. I think it's bad directing and a bad script, and I don't know what Ricky Lake could have done given there's just so much going on that's kind of poor quality. Like Ricky Lake is being, I feel like she almost knows that this movie's gonna be a bomb and she's nervous about it and really trying to sell it, and it just kind of ends up as annoying. But I also get the sense that the director is like, no, go broad, go big, be kind of be angsty. And
that must be an awful feeling as an actor or actress to be like, to sign on to a movie because maybe you believe in it or maybe it's just the role you were given, and like be on set and be a week or two into it and just be like, oh no, this is terrible.
And especially something that's going to take at least 90 days, like, and something, you know, it's one thing for like, you know, this movie, but like think of like an action movie where a weekend and you're the lead and all of a sudden it's like, man, this is gonna suck and we have 4 more months of this.
I mean, I guess at least with an action movie you can like they could fix that, but like this, like you're doing Mrs. Winterbourne, you gotta know like, boy, I don't know, I don't think there's a lot to like that can be fixed up.
On the other hand, they're all really rich and most of the day they're in the trailer just, you know, watching TV, so I won't cry too hard, but I do get, you know, it always sucks when you sign on for something and you immediately know like, well, shouldn't have done this.
Well, especially if you're in like a crossroads of your career, you know, or you know, you're like, it's not like Ricky Lake had a hit recently. I mean, her show was going well.
That's why when you have, well, you can't anymore. Too bad. It's too sad, but if you're ever in a bomb of a movie, you need to be on a talk show when Norm MacDonald is, so he can lay it in carrot top.
Absolutely.
I imagine most of our listeners have seen that, but there's a great clip from early-ish days of Conan O'Brien where I think it's Courtney Thorne Smith.
Yes, Courtney Thorne Smith, correct.
Yeah, she's on.
Good poll.
She's the main guest. Norm MacDonald was on earlier, and so he's sitting there, and she's trying to sell this movie she did with Carrot Top, and no one remembers what it is. And Norm, just in fine form, just spends like the next 10 minutes of her segment making fun of Carrot Top, and no one cares. She was relieved. She was glad she didn't have to talk about that stupid movie.
That clip hasn't watched more than Chairman of the Board, but Carrot Top hasn't watched.
So
that's 100%
no doubt
true
about that. Yeah.
Chairman of the Board.
Chairman of the Board, yeah. Joe, is this your question here about telling the truth about the family business?
Yeah, so I also don't
explain this.
I don't get, like, so we're supposed to believe that, she feels bad all the time about lying to this family and stuff. And there's, we didn't, I don't think we talked about it, or if we did, I blacked out for a little while. Where the Shirley MacLaine is going to write her into the will.
Yeah.
And that's also that. Just a zero drama situation. Cause like, okay, so do you think like when they disperse all the funds and stuff, like they're not going to check her social security card or something? Like she could just say, I'm this person, and then gets all the money, like what, in a suitcase
of
cash?
I was wondering that as the movie goes on, like she's going to get married, like at some point.
She doesn't even have ID.
Yes. It's like
I assume, yeah, I'm sure that you have to give your social or at least a state ID to the law office. Like, yep, I'm an heir to these millions.
You have to give your social security number to get the marriage license.
Yeah.
And I would imagine to get a birth certificate. I don't remember. Baby. I don't remember a whole lot of from those few days, but
I think.
So my point is that every character that we're supposed to like the two male leads, the twin brothers, mm-hmm. like Hugh. There's a plot point where they say he is supposed to take over the family business, and he just disappears.
He literally is like, I'll be right back, and then never comes back.
I'm going to Hong Kong.
So he is obviously has no interest whatsoever in being a part of however they got their money. And I don't remember if they explain it. Do they?
I don't think they do.
This was the point in the movie where I just went into a fugue state.
Yeah.
Like when they start putting on this, like, oh, I'm supposed to care about Bill now. Oh, come on.
And then Bill kind of just makes all these comments about how like his mom ruined his life and having to step up and take care of the business on his own without his brother ruined his life. So it's like, why should we feel bad about her just taking all their money? Like the people that are benefiting from it are miserable. And to this person who I guess is family as far as they know, but they barely know her. And he's just telling her all this stuff right away. So it's not like he's burying it that deep. So like, it just seems to run. The movie would work better if it was like the family wealth came from something that they really believed in.
Is there, you know how like there's common law and there's like statute of limitations like after so long?
Well, are you about to go? Are you about to go lawyer mode here?
Here's my question.
Oh man, this is going to be great.
We got Jordan Peterson over here.
If you pretend to be someone else for long enough and you get away with it.
I don't think common law is the same thing as faking an identity.
Is there a certain amount of time where they're like, listen, you went 10 years and they all thought you were this person. That person has not shown up to claim it. It is now yours.
Well, if that was the case, I would have spent the last 10 years pretending to be Gene Hackman because no one else has seen him.
Yeah, like I just feel like there should
Can
be.
You imagine, hey, I'm Gene Hackman.
I also think it's like would be a fun little grift for some people to be like, "What's your plan?" I think I could pretend to just be this person.
Well, what happens if the real person shows up again?
Well, that's the risk you have to take.
But after the 10 years and you get all their stuff,
it's too late. They were gone for 10 years. That's the law now.
Okay, well, if we have like real true interplanetary space travel someday. Are we allowed to make an exception for them?
Well, we would put in space exceptions in persona law, but right now with persona law, after 10 years
persona
of
law.
After 10 years of pretending to be someone, if there's no other claim for that person, you don't even need documentation anymore. God. You can just like have some letters.
Is this 10 years you've earned it? Is that what you're saying? Like that?
Yeah. So I'm trying to think of, let's say she, what I'm trying to think of in the scheme of the movie, let's say she, to kind of go on Joe's point, let's say she wasn't, you know, she was just like dishonestly going about this, getting on the will, doing all this. Mm-hmm. At a certain point, you know,
she's earned it, is what you're saying.
Well, well, I was thinking in real life, at a certain point, you're going to have to prove some sort of identification, and they're going to be like, oh, you're not that person. But I think there should be a loophole with persona law that after 10 years of fooling everyone that you're someone, you're now that person.
Oh, okay.
All right, I'm interested.
How about 13 years?
Thank God. You're negotiating against yourselves. Yourself. We never said bad no to 10.
Yeah. I like how also you thought that the amount of years was the sticking point.
What else would it be?
Well, just the entire concept of just if you pretend long enough, it comes true.
Yeah. I think that should be a path forward for people.
Is this your immigration plan?
No.
So I was going to, this is only tangential, but.
To persona law?
Yeah. I think that much as, you know, the internet and mass communication and ended the reign of the serial killer, yeah. I feel like it also ended. There used to be like a type of guy who's like, oh, I'm just going to fake my death. Or like you said, persona law, just like
persona law.
Yeah. I'm like, you know, there used to be all these like made for TV movies or like cult leaders and things like that. It's like, oh, he just said he was this guy. It's somehow and like somehow it'd be like, oh, I lost my license. Oh, here's a new one. What's your name?
I think that still exists, but it's entirely contained to Alaska.
It's much harder now. Like it, you know, with a digital footprint and
yeah,
you know.
It's impressive if you could pull it off. If you fool everyone that you're someone else for a decade, you get to be that person.
What? How does persona law fall into faking your own death? Like, let's say you owe a bunch of money and you fake your own death. How long do you have to go before they're like, oh, that was pretty good. You earned it. It's a clean slate.
10 years.
10 years?
Yeah. All right. Because that means you spent 10 years pretending you're someone else.
Oh, okay.
So now you get to be that new person.
Persona law also absolves you of the trickery of faking your own death. Okay.
God, I'm glad we figured this out.
Yep.
Yeah, nicely done.
Yeah. You're welcome, Lou.
Well, we came out of this with, man, we made money to watch the movie, and yeah. We came up with an foolproof way to get rich in 10 to 13 years, depending on what we settle on here.
Well, 10 is an even number, but 13 is like you've gone through the childhood phase of the new person.
You're a preteen as that
You're
person.
Now a teenager, yeah, you're a teenager. You get rights. You can stay up late. On weekends. You can stay up. You can watch 2020 after TGIF if you want when you're 13.
I like how it's a 13-year-old like 30 years ago.
Okay.
So I've shared a document with the two of you, and I can share this online.
This.
It is the internet. God bless the internet. It is every episode of Ricky Lake.
It was a 15-page document, I believe you sent us.
So the Ricky Lake Show had 1,980 episodes over 11 years.
Wow, that's more than we've had.
By a little.
Yep.
Yeah. So just to go back to talk about how there was such a need for content, like think about each of these was an hour, 45 minutes with commercials. There's just and this was like over the air. So like this, the space aliens far away, they're going to get these radio waves and be able to watch all this.
Mm-hmm.
Like
mm-hmm.
nearly 2,000 hours of Ricky Lake.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What if the aliens, they only get talk shows?
Man.
And for example,
what if they only get the phobia episodes of Maury? Then they just show up to Earth with like olives and balloons and stuff, and they think we're all gonna freak out.
Yeah, we have a puppy, and like they just hold it up.
Like, why aren't they all running away? Oh man!
Or they're gonna assume that all our kids need to be sent to boot camp. Like the humans just keep procreating and having these unruly children.
Well, when I turned 13 years old, I could have woke up and watched First Love Reunions on Ricky Lake that day.
So one thing I noticed as I just, I scanned briefly, a lot of repeat episodes. I cherry-picked some of my favorites. One was, couples compete for an all-nude wedding in Jamaica.
Wow. Okay.
One is just titled, Buxom Woman.
Yeah, there's one titled, Breast Size.
I like that. One is, homosexuals consider heterosexual relations to have children. I bet that ages very well.
Oh, boy. Okay.
One is just called Central Park Rampage.
Mm.
And then one is just cyber sex. Remember, that was a big topic in the 90s.
Yep.
And here's one that I don't know where we stand in this. Ultimatums for bald women.
Wow.
I tell you what, I am falling into this trap of, look at this streak of ones they had at one point. Welfare recipients. Suspected philanderers take lie detector tests. Sexually incompetent men. Lying internet Casanovas. And what a week! What a week!
And all of these could have been, you know, Maury.
Right.
Springer got a little more wacky, but I think fits in with him.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Well,
women who let their husbands cheat.
It's not cheating, then, is it?
That's true.
Well, I think we're wrapping this up. I guess we promised this at the beginning. I don't know what I'm going to go with here, but Joe, this has to be you. You come through with the questions.
I sent you a meme saying I was going to come through.
Yep. What is the worst, most embarrassing lie you've ever told, or the funniest? I know my answer on this one, but I'm not comfortable sharing.
Yeah, that's why I added the funniest caveat in case... Or, you know, you can go either direction here.
But it's both is the problem.
Yeah. So I'll start. Like, okay. Yeah, obviously some of these you got to keep to yourself.
Yep.
But I used to lie a lot at school at my job. And I think I went 2 years with always with a straight face. Dead. I mean, lying is easy and it's funny. Every single time sold it perfectly, I think. Convincing or telling other students at school that one of my colleagues was deaf. And like the first week or so you say something like every time he'd get brought up, I'd be like, man, it's amazing like what he's able to do. And like, what? It's like, well, he's deaf, but he still can. You know, not that, of course, you can still teach as a person, as a deaf person, no question about it. But it's just like he's able to read lips so well that he can get up in front of 35 kids and people don't even notice. And I just went, like, I kept this up for years. And I think eventually some kids really believed it because I was like, well, has he ever answered you when he was facing the other way? And like a couple kids were like, wow, no, I don't think he has. I was like, oh, mm-hmm. Well, there you go.
Does this your colleague knew you were doing this?
I told him like after like 9 months, like a semester.
After
of doing
a few
it.
Years.
Yeah, he doesn't work there anymore. But I always got a good kick out of that. That was just fun little thing just for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I will keep mine short. I'm not going to go. There's other ones that I can't. I can't. I'm sorry.
Well, this. Okay. So what people have to do is next time we have a Patreon poll, you need to vote for a movie that involves a con man or a liar of some kind. Always vote for that option because maybe Rob will reveal it behind the paywall.
I will say this one's not that good, but it always makes me laugh. And I think Duff knows this. But you know when you have to do icebreakers?
Oh, God. Yeah, right? They're the worst.
And one of the most common ones two truths and a lie, sure. Right? So my go-to is I always like to go with like two truths about me that are like pretty crazy that people wouldn't think are true, right? Like the fact that like my father was in World War II, right? People wouldn't believe that. Mm-hmm. Or interned at NASA for a year. And then my lie.
Wasn't it
make
for
everyone,
a summer?
For a summer.
Yeah. For a year.
I don't know.
You lied to describing your lie. Or your truth.
Double lie.
So the one I always put down there to make people uncomfortable is I always tell everyone that I was born inside out.
Wait, what?
For the third one, like, and I
was born inside out.
What does that even mean?
I don't know, but then they get
guy,
really
can you imagine like when a sock's inside out and you just kind of like wheel it forward and shake it? That's what they did with
like,
you.
Yeah, my dad was in World War II, and I interned at NASA for a summer, and I was born inside out.
I don't even know what that means. Like,
I was born inside out. That's so funny.
Like
oh God,
like
it's obsessed with that you thought of
muscles?
It because it's such a funny lie.
But it makes because people are always like, The lie is, you were born inside out.
I'm like, sorry, no, you wasn't. I'm sorry, you're what?
It's the best lies. I was born inside out.
Yeah, a lot of people don't. Yeah, I was born inside
out. Happens a lot.
Happens more than you would think. Oh, it does. Like, there are things that happen a lot that are more than you would think. Like babies being caught out of burning buildings seems to happen all the time.
What?
I think it's, yeah, I know what you mean. That I think especially in early movies, that was a common trope.
But in real life, it happens too. Like every couple years, some baby just gets tossed out of a building and they catch it.
Listen, there's 7 billion people, so you gotta, it's gotta happen.
You never hear about
often.
The babies they don't catch, do you?
Wow, that person just runs back into the building. If you step up to catch the baby and you drop it, just step on in, buddy.
That's a Curb Your Enthusiasm there.
That actually would be a good episode. Like being mad that you didn't get credit for trying.
I tried, baby. So slippery.
Yeah, what'd you do?
Yeah.
I was breathing in smoke.
You tried catching a baby? 4 stories. I tried.
Oh, God. That'd be. Oh, we got to move on.
Yeah.
I'm freaking just thinking about that now.
What's your lie, Duff? That you caught that you were a baby thrown out of a building and caught?
No, but that's a good one for 2 truths and a lie.
I was born inside out. I've been laughing about that for days. I was born inside out.
I don't have any like really good lies off the top of my head. What I do see, my thing is more like secrets and lies of omission.
Okay, those count. Those are my favorites too. So
those are mainly at work to. Usually get out of sharing or okay, I'll go with one that is icebreaker related. And by the way, you get like 1 icebreaker a year and has to be a good question. So
what's the most embarrassing you've ever had to talk to a doctor about would be a good icebreaker.
that's a HIPAA violation.
Well, it depends on which country you're doing this in. We might have some listeners overseas that could get away with it.
Yeah. So in addition to you don't need icebreakers, likely, make sure, and Rob, I've talked about this, it has to be a question about something you have control over. I think anyone who's listened to the show for a long time knows that I had a special needs brother who passed away 2009. So when I can't do it, when I was like 30-ish.
Right.
And I don't like sharing at work except for like a very few select people. And even then,
Tom, listen to the podcast. They want some sharing from you.
Yeah. No, I don't share my podcast for many reasons. But one of the icebreakers was someone like, "Oh, talk about your siblings." I'm like, "Oh, Christ." So I just said,
no.
"I don't have any siblings." And it wasn't so much that I was like, "Oh, I'm going to get all emotional." It's like, "I don't want to have to deal with this. A long time ago, I was talking to someone and we shared the opinion about these stupid icebreaker things. And she said that she's like, most people at work haven't earned the right to information about me. I'm like, yes, thank you. So mine is just a lot of stuff like that. To give it a little more levity, stuff like, just sneaking out the hall when I know someone's bringing in their baby. So I don't have to see it.
Oh, man. God bless you, Duff. The real heroes. Just, where are you going? No, I'll be right back.
Oh, if they're talking to you, you're done. You're cooked. You got.
Yeah. That's why you got to let
them
know.
That's a rookie move, Rob.
That's why if they know about you not catching the baby, they don't want you to meet their baby. You got to spread that around.
I'll, I'll bring that up the next icebreaker. If you tell a story, it's like, oh, I tried to catch this baby being thrown out of a burning building, and I dropped it. Turned inside out.
Oh, God. Okay. Well, guys,
we did it.
Yeah.
This went places I didn't expect.
Well, so did this movie.
Yep.
Yeah, that's for sure, man.
Well, Lou, thank you for
thank you.
Did we talk about this whole movie and not get to the ridiculous murder thing at the end?
We did.
So silly.
Yeah, I think I blacked out at that point.
You blacked out. Yeah.
Yeah. It's
hard to stay focused on this movie the whole time.
Yeah.
I feel like my attention span's pretty strong, but whoo boy. Anyways, it's one of those movies where it's really bad, but I'm really glad I watched it because it made me think of funny things. Do you guys have movies like that?
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes
sense. Just for our listeners know, we watched a pan and scan version, not in widescreen, so maybe our opinions would be different had
that's
we seen
a really good point.
The original aspect ratio that it was shot.
There might have been some really, really moving or funny things that were just out of frame.
Yeah. You know, it's like if you see 2001 in pan and scan, you're not really getting it.
Yeah, no. The script was pan and scan too, so I'm sure there were some good lines that were cut out. So listeners, here's what's gonna happen. We got another one. It keeps pushing back the season idea I have, and it's fine because I'm lazy. But we're still gonna do a season on buddy cop movies, and we have another one of these bonus ones that people paid for coming out. And then so here's what you should know. There'll be more episodes coming out here for that. If you want even more stuff, you can go to patreon.com/themidnightboys. For $2 a month, you get access to, like, it's a ton. I don't know how many it is. It's like over 4 years worth of episodes. That,
so then it would have to be
you can
60
to.
At least, right?
52 of them we have.
Okay, so it hasn't been.
So, and then also, if you're like Lou and you're like, hey, I want to hear these idiots tell me the straight dope, the truth about a movie, you can pay $50 and we'll do that for you. And who knows, maybe we'll come up with some.
I cannot beg everyone enough to get some kind of courtroom drama so we get more law theories from Rob. Please.
Persona law. We're thinking about.
Please.
Listen, you have to be the kind of thinker you have to be to come up with persona law is only from those who've gone through the horrors of being born inside out and coming out the other side.
I'm just amazed.
He saw the sin inside of us.
I'm just amazed you can come up with such theories, given your handicap in life.
Yeah, yeah, I know. Well, listeners, thank you for listening. Lou, thank you for paying.
Thanks,
and
Lou.
We will have more content as we always do.